Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra the Watchful. Welcome to Follow-Up Friday. It is August 24th, and we have a lot of Ravens.
Yeah, it's a big one. This is a big one.
It is known to us, at least.
It is, yeah.
I'm trying to figure out how to incorporate more of the Westeros.
Well, I hope it's known.
Yeah, it is known. It is known.
Yeah, you know, always trying to up our game. And speaking of games, man, people in the group, we hit our 25 patron goal, and now we got to come up with a drinking game.
I know, seven hells.
I know, seriously,
it's ridiculous.
I was like, on patron, on the goals, it does say we will come up with a game.
Yeah,
and
I know.
People like Regine and Adam Parker and some of these other people in the group are just like, hey, so like,
when we playing?
Like we should play at this time so everyone can play. And that's a cool idea. And like they're like, what's the rules? I'm like. We need to like figure that out. Like
yes.
So we're working on it.
It sounds like we're all just going to get trashed.
To be completely honest, I never even thought we'd ever hit it. So like the fact that it's like crazy to me.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And just looking at the numbers, we've had a huge number jump in terms of like downloads and stuff like that. So obviously it seems like we have a lot of new people here.
Welcome. You know, if you're new, you've been listening, obviously we can... You know, as Sir Matt said, from the numbers, we can kind of tell we do have more listeners than we ever had before. So kind of exciting.
Yeah,
so,
it is. Yeah. And so real quick, I just want to say a lot of people, just because we always get new people and they ask best place to reach us. You can if you want to submit a Raven, you can do it on Instagram. You can do it on Facebook, or you can send us an email.
Yep. Send us that email at btkcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, that is probably the easiest way to get it. If you send me something on Facebook, I can kind of I'll respond to it. Organizationally speaking for us, I think Gmail is starting to become the best way. Because then we have folders and we can see which ones we've done before. Because sometimes we look at them and we're like, did we do this one? And I would hate to...
Yeah, you hate to miss one.
I would hate to miss one. Be like, I think we did that. Because sometimes we get similar questions. And,
right, yeah.
Right, so.
I mean, it is a lot of dark words and a lot of dark wings.
It is. You know? Yeah, any of those ways is fine. For those of you who have been submitting on Facebook, and yeah, keep doing it. Absolutely.
It's awesome. I mean, it's actually been really neat. And I'm trying to super organize all of that. The origin stories that people are sending in, I've been throwing those into the main show.
Mm-hmm.
So keep sending those in. Those are a lot of fun to kind of see how people got into.
Yeah. And we'll do something here too on Follow-Up Friday. So.
Yep.
And we have a lot of things planned. We've been doing a lot of organizing of things. We have some plans as we start to gear up to Fire and Blood. And
yes, we do.
Season 8. Of the show, where I'll just go ahead and say it, we're thinking of doing a rewatch, and then we realized we could not do an episode a week because there's 67 episodes, and that would be over a year, and we'd miss it. So, just tentatively, we're kind of thinking of doing a rewatch and just maybe like 5 to 10 minute videos. We may actually do those just on YouTube and release them like once a weekday or something,
right?
Just that way we can have that kind of done. And stuff like that too. So
yeah,
maybe
yeah.
mini episodes or something. So
yeah, you really got a lot to. I mean, because in the next year, there's just so much that's happening.
I know. Fire and Blood. Yeah. Season 8. Possibly Winds of Winter.
It's happening.
Yeah, I do think Winds is coming next year.
It's happening, and then we will be so.
And then the prequel, and then man, it's a lot. So
it's great. Yeah. So it's where we want to be. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, trivia. Last week's trivia question was, who knights Gendry?
Yep.
Sir Ezra, who knights Gendry?
Beric Dondarrion.
Yeah.
Our good friend. Yeah.
Beric Dondarrion.
Takes a knight to make a knight. Yeah. So, yeah. Beric's a boss. So.
Yeah. So, and the winner was Tye Strader. Once again, he's coming back. You know, he's always in the fold. He's always kind of hanging out in there.
Oh, yeah. So. Absolutely.
Yeah. So.
Good to see him back up there on the... On the top.
Yeah.
So
we get the leader. We're going. Lady Lauren had messaged me, and she had been kind of saying, you guys should do a we should get that trial by trivia going, like a live trial by trivia going at some point in the future. So, yeah, we're going to start working on that. And we were coming up with some ideas and formats of a way to do that.
Yeah. Tricky. It's tricky, but we're excited about possibly pulling that off in the near future.
Yeah, so maybe some kind of live Google Hangout event or something. We're working on that. So
right.
All right. Well, I got a cool comment. I always love to read positive reviews.
Yeah.
Which is great. Fortunately, we don't really get that many negative reviews. So I don't.
Fortunately,
we did have that one crow a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, sure we did.
But fortunately, so this one is from Lady Sydney, as I'm calling her. I'm going to call her Lady Sydney of the Steel City.
Yeah.
So, hey guys, my name is Sydney and I'm from Pittsburgh, and I just recently came across your podcast and I love it. I just read the books for the first time and finished them at the beginning of the summer, and I went into sort of a book coma when I was done, so I watched the show. Yet I still wasn't ready to let go of Game of Thrones, and that's how I stumbled across your podcast. So I just wanted to give a shout out and say, hey, I really love listening to you guys, and thanks for giving me something that fills the void in me when I'm missing Game of Thrones.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, again,
Lady
Sydney. We got a lot of new listeners, and it's always great. And yeah, so for just because we have so many new people,
yeah.
I guess we are kind of book heavy.
We are.
But we look at the whole thing.
Oh, we definitely do. I mean,
it's the spectrum.
Well, and right now, I've never seen something that's more unique than what we have with the HBO show, though. You know, something that has gone beyond the books.
The books, absolutely.
Like, that, to me, I think you remember a couple, whenever that was, which I forget which season that was, where we were at, and I was watching it with you, and I was like, I don't know what to do anymore.
Right.
Well, like, I was so
right.
shocked.
Well, like, when they went back and they did, like, the Balon Greyjoy dying. It was like, okay, maybe they're going to fill in some of this other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nope. Oh,
still plowing forward, you know, but
So we
are book heavy, but we do look at you know, show and everything.
Histories,
we got the histories,
Duncan Egg.
Yeah. So
when Fireblood comes out, so the whole kind of thing. So all right. Well, let's go ahead and head on over to our first Raven.
Man, I am excited for some of these Ravens today.
Is this a...
So this is actually...
I got it. I see it here. I'll go ahead and read it. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
From Tanner Lawless.
Yeah.
I believe this is the guy who he left a podcast review we read a while back and mm-hmm. says this is what keeps his cubicle.
Yeah.
Keeps him going in his cubicle. Hey, I pretty much work in a cubicle too, so I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
You need those podcasts.
Yep.
Shouldn't Jaime and Barristan know why the Kingsguard was at the Tower of Joy?
Hold on a second. Can you just read that one more time?
Shouldn't Jaime Lannister and Barristan Selmy know why the Kingsguard was at the Tower of Joy?
Now, just so everyone remembers, so they're still alive.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a story to be told there. So this was, I mean, really... impressive, and I'd never ever thought of this.
Never have. When you had said that to me when we were like getting our notes set up in the dock beforehand, and we're like, do we need to look anything up real quick before we go? And you're like, oh, here's one. Shouldn't, and you said that, and I was like,
what?
Yeah, actually, like, oh my god, like, just like, yes, totally clicked in my mind. Yeah, so here we go. I think this is from him, and also
it's like a Reddit. He found it
on Reddit.
Yeah, and just wanted to get our thoughts.
Yeah,
on
so
it.
Kind of a combination here. And then we read like the Reddit post and looked at that. Mm-hmm. So there are no secrets amongst the Kingsguard. Therefore, Jaime and Barristan Selmy should know why Gerald Hightower, Oswald Went, and Arthur Dayne were in Dorne at the Tower of Joy. Right. We hear about the exchange between Jaime and Rhaegar, in which Rhaegar says that Jaime must remain in King's Landing under the wishes of Aerys Targaryen, the Mad King. Second, and as a hostage of sorts. Rhaegar says things will change when he comes back. He then leaves for the Trident and takes Luan Martell and Barristan Selmy. The White Bull, the Sword of the Morning, and Oswald Went are not there. Was there ever the conversation? Where's the Lord Commander and Arthur Dayne? Arthur Dayne was, after all, Jaime's role model. I don't recall Jaime ever consciously acknowledging the fact that Ned killed Arthur Dayne, but I would go as far to say that this is why Jaime had all of Ned Stark's men killed on the street in King's Landing.
Okay. Very interesting thoughts. And I was reading in some of the Reddit thread there, just different various comments and things, and people were making a lot of really, just a lot of good speculation, you know, as to, first of all, Rhaegar kind of disappears, right? He and Lyanna, you know, are just, where are they? Where do mm-hmm. they go? Where do they travel to? Does Aerys send out the Kingsguard to secure his son and bring him home?
Yeah.
And does he somehow say, I'll go back to King's Landing, you know, but you have to stay here with her
right.
and protect her? You know, I mean, is that something that was that some sort of arrangement? You know that he's close with Sir Arthur Dayne, right? Good friends,
right.
And things. So there's something going on there. But what could Sir Barristan Selmy tell us? You know, what could Jaime Lannister tell us about these arrangements? You know what I mean? Is there's definitely more to this, right?
Yeah.
So what is it? What do they say in the show when Ned shows up there and he's like, we looked for you on the Trident, you know, and he doesn't say we were here.
Right.
But he says we were like away.
We were far away. Yeah.
We're far away. And it's just very cryptic. It's sort of like, why doesn't he say, well, yeah, this is where we were at here the whole time. He doesn't even say that. He just says
right.
we were away. We were like about.
So where were they?
Yeah, we were about, you know. Like a higher business, you know, so,
right.
Something else is going on. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. But the thing is that actually, that to me, so maybe Jaime doesn't know, or maybe it will be kind of revealed later, but Barristan could know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And say something.
Well, I mean, it could also.
Because we do get. Most of actually, I'm in a Storm of Swords right now. I'm going through Arya and Daenerys' stuff, and Artisan Whitebeard, you know,
yep.
Barristan Selmy is telling. This is where we get most of what Rhaegar was like as a person
mm-hmm.
is
yeah.
from him telling Daenerys.
Yeah.
So he would have to know. I mean, somebody's got to know.
Well, he went with him on, you know, to the Trident.
Yeah.
So, and in those comments I was reading, you know, it's not like they weren't saying that. Barristan Selmy didn't originally go to the tower. Perhaps he was there.
Right.
And they had a meeting to bring him back, and he traveled back with Rhaegar and left three of the Kingsguard there with Lyanna. You know, there could have been that type of situation going on. So, yeah, very mysterious. You know, the other part that's mentioned here is the idea that Jaime Lannister never really does talk about Ned killing Sir Arthur Dayne.
Yeah.
And it's not something that's really talked a whole lot about. It's just shrouded in sort of mystery, right? You know, we know that Hallen Reed was you know basically saved Eddard's life.
Yeah, we didn't even know that. I think most times it's just kind of referred that he beat him in single combat.
He beat him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He beat him. Yep. Yeah. Not that he killed him.
Right.
You know,
there are some times I think he's referred to he slew him in single combat. But,
oh, does it? Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think it's every time.
Yeah. It's just interesting, though, that, like, Jaime doesn't. I mean, it's not like. You feel like that would be something that would be waved in front of our faces more, you know?
Absolutely.
But
even in the show.
It doesn't look like it is.
Right.
So.
Like, even in the show, it's not necessarily so much.
And maybe
so.
It's just because it was the way in which he's defeated. Maybe it's this way in which. Maybe Hallen Reed does sneak up behind him and it is feigning
like
dead.
Like it's in the show,
yeah. Maybe that's really what happens. And so. You know, Eddard's not really, like, going around boasting that he...
If anything, it says that Ned would have died if it weren't for Hallen Reed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So...
Yeah. Yep. So, I don't know. It's something interesting just to think about. And, you know, as we move forward, hopefully we get some more, you know, context from those two, you know, Kingsguard members, former Kingsguard and Barristan Selmy. So,
yeah.
You know. Yeah.
No, it's a great theory, great thoughts. I do hope we get more about it. And I would love to get a Jaime perspective of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Well, and you were talking earlier before we started the idea that what is it that's going to take, you know, that's going to be Jaime Lannister's great deed that's
mm-hmm.
written down in
the book.
In the book, you
right.
know. And it's like honestly, history may look back and, like, him being the Kingslayer may have been the greatest thing that... I mean, he could have saved
absolutely.
All of King's Landing by
well, you know,
the
interesting
quote,
thing I remember...
The king.
I think it was an Emergency Awesome video, and he was talking about what's it going to be like in Season 8, because we don't know if the books go this way, but so at least the show. In Season 8, we know Jaime is riding north to Winterfell, right? To meet up so they can go take on the
okay.
Night King.
Yep.
So what's that first conversation going to be like when Jaime meets up with Bran?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
it's like, well, the whole reason I'm, you know, with Red Crow is because you pushed me out a window.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, and then maybe, I don't know, maybe Bran tells him some stuff about history and...
Just, yeah. And that's a whole other thing, too. Like, does show Bran know? Has he gone to see what happened to him. You know, his own. Does he know what happened to him?
Oh, does he know if that he got pushed out the window? Because he doesn't really remember. Yeah, right, you're right. Right. Yeah, I don't know.
So, because right now we know Book Brand is still kind of developing all these different things, but in the show,
Brand obviously saw what happened at the Tower of Joy.
Yeah,
but I don't know
how much has he seen. What does he know? You know, it could one be afraid of going back and looking at you know their own life. You know,
right.
Type of thing. It's something. It's one of the, it's like a spot in his life that he doesn't want to go back and face or remember or whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's still hard for him to kind of think through. So
yeah. So
yeah.
All right. All right. You want to get this next one?
Yeah. So all right. This is from our good friend Lord Hunter the Foulmouthed here. He sent us a couple. We're gonna read through these and it's good. We've got a mixed batch of sort of like a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms stuff, some Targaryens, dragon eggs, and whatnot here. So good day, Sir Matt and Sir Ezra. He says, so I've been hammering the Targaryen Dragon Rider content, getting mentally ready for you guys, and noticed that the norm is that an infant Targaryen would be a part of the, like hatching a dragon egg. You know, right. They would put that egg in the cradle, right? My question is, does that make what Dany did, hatching three dragon eggs, incredible or no big deal because, you know, all the other Targaryens back through history didn't have a chance to hatch multiple eggs. So is it, you know, is there some sort of like...
Well, I do think sometimes it seems like the dragons did... It would be like you'd have a dragon and they would kind of have like, what do they call it? I don't know. It's when they have like a multiple eggs. I can't think of the name
of it. The word for it.
Yeah, it's like a litter or like whatever.
A clutch or something.
Clutch, yeah, a clutch.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so like I think you had some dragons that had a clutch and then they would... Yeah. Multiple would kind of hatch, but it was. I think the reason is because I think what he's saying that they didn't have a chance to. I think it is because they would just give you one.
One. Yeah, I was gonna say the same. I don't think they had the chance. Possibly you could have had all three of them hatch in one cradle, but it's sort of like it was a sign. It was a good sign for those Targaryens to have one.
Well, we know the egg. You know, egg on the fifth. We don't know, but we know that he had seven eggs. Mm-hmm. At
Summerhall?
At Summerhall, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, what was the, when they're at Butterwell's place, right?
Yeah.
They're kind of fighting over an egg, you know? So, yeah, they're definitely still out there. So I don't know that it makes it any more significant. I think there just wasn't maybe the opportunity. The significant piece with hers is that they're supposedly like petrified, you know, I don't know how old they are, where they came from, you know, and it's just there's a more magical element to it, the way in which they, you know, come
well,
to be.
Well, a lot of people think that there's a ton of dragon eggs in Dragonstone. Like that's kind of the thing. That's why it's called Dragonstone, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, for sure.
So yeah, so
okay, yep. Okay, so let's see. He kind of continues on here. Let's see when Duncan. Okay, so now we're going to get into he's talking about. The Hedge Knight. Okay, so we get into the Hedge Knight just a little bit here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Let me back up first. Twofold question here. First, how much of it... let's see. The Raven is obscuring way off topic here. Twofold question. First, how much, if any, do you think the Andal gods of the Seven, I'm not saying that they're right, influence the World of Ice and Fire? And this is why I'm asking. So this then takes us back into the Hedge Knight. So when Duncan was racing around trying to find a sixth knight, Prince Baelor rolls in to save the day, and they start discussing strategy. Baelor says he will fight the Kingsguard and keep them busy while they handle the others. The others, I'm sorry, every time I see it. The Laughing Storm says, are you sure? And Prince Baelor says, let the gods judge if they don't like it, and they did, basically.
Yeah.
So this is the rabbit hole here. Could the Seven, if they are participating in the World of Ice and Fire, have caused the death of Baelor Breakspear? After the fight, Maegor says he doesn't remember hitting him in the head, but just says it had to have been him because the only other people he fought were the Kingsguard. Could the Seven have been upset because they couldn't judge Baelor Breakspear's guilt or innocence because he was fighting people that couldn't fight back, so they... killed him themselves. And so I'll stop it right there because that, you know, the gist of that is like he's cheated the system.
Yeah.
You know, Baelor, you know, is, and my counter to that is that they don't, they basically, I mean, it's, he could have, I guess he's saying, you know, too, Baylor could have picked somebody else besides the Kingsguard.
Right.
And he could have said, like, it wouldn't be fair because they, you know, they can't really strike me. But that was, you know, Arian's fault.
Yeah.
That was Makar's, you know, fault for picking the Kingsguard. You know right. what I mean? They didn't see that coming. So they had them all picked
and,
out
and
first.
Initially, Darren throws in a claim, right? Like, he throws in a claim mm-hmm. and say, well, he lies about it.
Yeah.
He lies about his claim. So you could argue that he later withdraws it, like right before the fight.
Right. Yeah.
But even still, it's part of it. And so you could say, well, maybe the gods, because of that, had him pick the three Kingsguard. You know what I mean? I don't know. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, at the bottom line here is at the trial by seven with Sir Duncan, the Tall, and he is Sir Duncan, by the way.
Yeah.
He's a knight. All right. He's an edge knight. And he is judged. In this.
Right.
And, I mean, the gods do judge him, and he comes out on top.
Yeah, and the gods decide that maybe the realm needs a hedge knight.
Maybe they need a hedge knight more than they need Baylor.
Right.
You know what I mean? And maybe Baylor was trying to play the system. Although, he has that great strategy you were talking about the other day about using tourney.
It's super cool. So what happens is, you know, they're getting ready for this, like, and they're all going to joust each other, and, you know, you're riding against Kingsguard. So they're using war lances, and Baylor Breakspear says, you know, these have sharp tipped points. If these hit us, there's going to be a big bloody mess, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he says we should use tourney lances, which are a little bit longer, and they say, yeah, like, you know, the guys or the other guys on that team are saying, yeah, but if they break, and he's saying it doesn't matter, they're longer. He's like, our best chance is to hit them and unseat them because – then right. we have the advantage.
Right. Yeah, basically.
And it's
yeah.
so cool. It is
really neat. It's just like, oh, your lance needs to be true. You know,
right.
you got to hit your mark. And
he says hit him right in the face.
Right. Yeah, basically. yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, knock them out. You know what I mean? And so it's cool. He's all about strategy and things. So I don't know. I think he's using just good sound strategy. I think it was just one of those things where he might have actually got lulled into a false sense of safety, you know, fighting the Kingsguard, and then his brother comes over, and just in the heat of the moment, I mean, he's getting knocked off balance, and then he swings his hammer and hits him in the head, and it just, you know.
Right.
I mean, Baylor doesn't die right there. He doesn't die until later.
Right.
His helm is smashed in, and it's actually holding his skull.
Well, it's when Dunk actually gets unseated.
Yeah.
Because he kind of, like, you know, he's nervous.
He's
nervous. He's riding, and like he kind of forgets his things, but it's a little too late. He still hits.
Yeah.
He's still and knocks off.
Right. But doesn't he get caught in the shoulder or something?
Yeah. He does. He gets caught in the shoulder, and as he's kind of like standing up, it says he just sees somebody get hit on the side of the head.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, most people think that that's
Baylor.
Baylor. Yeah.
Getting hit. Yeah. So. Oh boy. So, anyways, I don't know, Lord Hunter. I think it's a good question. I mean, I think perhaps the gods are weighing in. The seven are more, you know, playing a role in a sense.
Well, I think they also have another guy on their team die, don't they?
Yeah, they
Dunk
do.
Dunk does. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember who it is, but there's a couple.
It's It's the guy who gets his leg broke. But when he jousts Arian Brightflame earlier, and he cheats, and he hits his horse. Yeah.
That guy dies, huh?
Because he gets his leg broke, and then he rides with, I think it's him.
Wow.
Harway or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though, the best part, man, the Fossaway.
Oh, I know.
The Fossaway cousins, man, are just like it's just fantastic. It's some of the best rides.
It's Stefan Fossaway, who's like the jerk and betrays him and is a knight, and Raymond is his cousin.
Right, right.
And is a squire. And then
the Bad Apple, man.
Yeah, the Bad Apple. So he changes his color. He's like, oh, right. He's like, And the Harry Lloyd, who is Viserys Targaryen, who's reading it, just does a great job in like all these different voices.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh, "I'll be a ripe apple," like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and it's just like, and that's the coolest part of the whole thing, which Cesar and I were talking about beforehand. We talk about Gendry, right? Only a knight can make a knight,
right? Yeah,
is when you have Lionel Baratheon, the Laughing Storm, is who he's saying.
Yes,
there.
Yeah.
And we talked about last week or Monday.
Yeah.
He, you know, Dunk later he fights with Dunk, and then later Dunk has to fight him.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's just when he's Lionel Baratheon's like, it's true. Any knight can make a knight. It's like, yeah. Because Raven Fosse, like, he's down on one knee, and he's like, knight me.
Can you imagine? I mean, it's the coolest thing. It's like, they can't find anybody else. They're betrayed by Stefan Fosseway. And so, like, he only has, like, four at that point or something.
He's like, knight me.
He's like, knight me. And all of a sudden, it's just there.
Doug's like, I gotta go find somebody. Well, and it's Egg who brings Lionel Baratheon.
It's just crazy. It is such a cool thing.
It's so cool.
So, just, yeah. If you haven't read that, you have to go check it out. So, yeah. All right. Let's move on here. Thank you, Lord Hunter. Again, we appreciate it. We always get some good correspondence from him. So,
This one came in on Instagram. This is a new person, I think. The Lost Knight of Norvos.
Mm-hmm.
Let me read this here. First, I would thank you for the amount of time, effort, and dedication you put into making your podcast. Well, thank you.
Yep, appreciate it.
Seriously. I decided to give the TV series Game of Thrones a try last year and fell in love with everything to do with the World of Thrones. At the beginning of July, I made the decision to give the books an attempt and finish the first book in less than a week. I'm currently on the second book. I think he says on the second book, A Storm of Swords. That's the third book. Maybe that's what he meant. Or maybe he's in like second chapter of A Storm of Swords.
Mm-hmm.
At the time of writing this, I'm at the part where Sam and Gilly have just fought some whites in an abandoned wildling village. In this chapter, Sam has a dream about him returning to his home at Hornhill, but with several differences. For example, he is the Lord of Hornhill. This reminded me of a scene in a Jaime chapter in which Jaime is asleep and has dreams of him returning to Casterly Rock. But he too has some differences, as he is abandoned by Cersei in the tunnels beneath the rock. In both dreams, both Sam and Jaime come across two people that have... In both dreams, both Sam and Jaime come across two people they have recently come to care about, Gilly and Brienne. This got me wondering if these two dreams are connected in any way. Both chapters surround the Catelyn chapter, in which she and King Robb are traveling to the Twins for Edmure's wedding to a fray. And then Rob is going on to take back his home from the Ironborn.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you think that this is just a coincidence, or there is a significant theme of returning home? Dany trying to return to Westeros, the Mance Raiders' wildling army trying to rejoin the rest of mankind, Arya Stark trying to reach her family in the course of the Whites traveling south.
Yeah.
And then he's... Right. And he says, I first discovered your podcast about a fortnight ago and have become instantly hooked. I await all your content with nothing but anticipation. Recently, you have discussed the site of the last battle between the armies of the living and the dead. I believe this will take place at the Tower of Joy.
Yeah.
And this is the place where ice and fire were brought together and could be the place where one triumphs over the other. I'm the Lost Knight of Norvos. Real quick on the Tower of Joy thing. That is interesting. I haven't heard that thought.
No. I'd love to hear people in our Facebook group possibly just toss out where you think that last battle will take place.
Right.
You know, let's map it out. Let's see where we get some good thoughts. I mean, that's a good one for sure. So maybe we can do like a poll, kind of figure that out.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually in A Storm of Swords right now. So I think that is actually kind of the theme of that book, is mm-hmm. you have Arya is traveling around. I mean, poor Arya, man. I mean, she's like, I want to go to Riverrun, and then maybe I should go. And then, like, the Hound grabs her, and she gets caught up with Beric and Darian, and then the Hound grabs her and takes her to the Twins, and then, like, the Red Wedding happens, and says, I'm going to take you to the Vale, and then they stop at the inn, and he gets injured, and then now she's on her way to Braavos.
Because
she tries to get on a ship at, what is it? It's not White Harbor, it's, I heard it, Salt Pans.
Oh yeah.
And she tries to get on the ship. It's the same thing how it happens in the show, except in the show, Brienne and the Hound fight, that doesn't happen.
Right.
But the scene of the ship is the same thing that happens, where Arya walks up and she's trying to give this guy some copper,
right?
Silver for passage, and he says, "No, I'm not going to the wall." She hands him another coin, iron coin.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, you got a cabin? I'm like, no problem. Right,
That was the
Valar Morghulis, or Valar Morghulis, as the audiobook calls it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you just kind of described her whole,
arc and
journey,
book,
right? Yeah, but it's wild, kind of like Arya. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's this wild trip, being kind of blown this way and that way, and just a lot of craziness goes on with her, you know.
Yeah.
So
but that's kind of every that is kind of, A Storm of Swords is kind of like that for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Is you're into that third storm. You're into that third book, and you know the first book is just kind of setting everything up. The second one, I think, is where you're starting to finally get that kind of push. Like, okay, this side's getting some power. This side's getting some power. And this third one, I mean, everything's, like, out of control. I mean, the Battle of Blackwater happens. Joffrey dies. Or the Battle of Blackwater ends A Clash of Kings. And so then you have, like, Tywin comes back. And he takes over as Hand of the King. And so Tyrion's right. in this new position where he's trying to, like, deal with Shay and the court.
Yeah, he doesn't know how they're going to treat him.
Doesn't know how they're going to treat him. Yep. You've got Jaime. This is the first time we get Jaime POVs,
mm-hmm.
right? And so yeah. his hand's been cut off. And
yeah. Yeah, I would say The Lost Knight here has honestly laid it out for us. I mean, there's a lot of that. The finding oneself, the journey, right? The journey home. You know, a hero kind of sets out and then... The whole time you're out kind of learning, growing, and things like that, they're thinking of home, trying to either get back home, or it just kind of comes up in their mind. But happens a lot, actually, and I'm glad he pointed that out, really.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that there's any... he mentioned the part about Jaime coming across Cersei beneath the rock there.
That's in a dream, yeah.
Yeah. How does it say there? Oh, he is abandoned by Cersei in the tunnels beneath the rock.
Right.
So, I mean, there's that. So you can look at those dreams, too, and kind of, you know, look at how possibly they are foils of one another and
right.
how, like, you know, it's two people who used to, you know, be in love and then they're kind of separating possibly in the future. And
right.
then, you know, Gilly and Sam kind of coming together, you know. So, yeah, it's some... Could be like some parallel structure and things. I'd have to go look exactly where they're at in relationship to that chapter. He's talking that they kind of surround
right.
with King Rob, but yeah, it's definitely.
But yeah, that's kind of the theme. That's kind of the theme of I would say that book is because that and with Dany that Dany in Storm of Swords finally has like an army, and it's when she gets the Unsullied. You know what I mean? So now she's like in a position to where she's like, okay, like I could theoretically come over.
Yeah.
Right, like I at least now have some army, like an army with me. So.
You know, okay. So his question is basically, is there any significance in all those themes that you're seeing? You know, at the end of all of this, does everyone end up back at home? You know, do the Targaryens end up back on the throne? You know, do
at the end of all this or this book?
No, not
oh, in general,
in the series. Yeah, in the whole series. You know, are the Starks back up in Winterfell? Does everybody go back to their rightful place and we start over again? Type of thing. I just kind of wonder, you know. I hope the Targaryens take the throne back.
I do. Well, they're gonna. You know, I mean, Jon Snow. So
and they
or
just
Daenerys,
can't have it.
So, yeah.
You know, I think the North should. You know, the King in the North should be the King of the North. You know.
Yeah.
What I mean? So.
Well, when you're the King of the North and the King of the South.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So awesome. But yeah. Thanks. Appreciate that. Okay. Time to move on. Right.
Yeah.
All right. This is from The Ghost, and we appreciate this. We always get a weekly correspondence from The Ghost, and last week we just got so busy
right.
with so many different ravens that, you know, I meant to let The Ghost know that we did in the show, just so we kind of table this one for the next episode this week here. So in Essos, Mira Mazdur says she was trained in human anatomy by Maester Marwyn, Marwyn the Mage.
Yeah.
Friends. So... I just did a little digging again before we started this on Marwyn the Mage and who is he, you know. I was really looking at, you know how they talk about that when the Maesters come to the Citadel and there is, like, we don't always know, they just kind of go by one name.
Right.
We lose track of the records, we don't know which house they came from necessarily, especially those who have been there for a long time. You know, like, we didn't know... You know, Aemon Targaryen ends up being like...
Oh, absolutely.
It's huge. That's a
yeah.
huge reveal, right? So who is Marwyn?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, which... How is does he have some sort of allegiance or something? But yeah, anyway, so he spent 8 years in the East mapping distant lands, searching for lost books, and studying with warlocks and shadowbinders. He managed to light an obsidian candle and foresaw Sam arriving in Old Town and sends the Sphinx, or Alaris, to fetch him. Alaris is supposedly of no noble birth, half Dornish with a slow southern drawl, and half summer islander with teak colored skin. Let's see. Upon hearing Sam's tales, this maester catches the Cinnamon Wind to go find Daenerys immediately, because Aemon said the Citadel must send her a maester at once to bring her home to Westeros before it's too late. This time, I believe it's Maester Marwyn who is approaching Dany in the Dothraki Sea. He tells Alaris to stay and help Sam complete his work. Quote, the Sphinx is the riddle, not the riddler. Do you know what that means? No, it's a riddle. I wish I knew. And, well, yeah, okay. So, let's see. So, anyways, just let's continue on here because there's more thoughts here.
Yeah.
The Sphinx's mom is of the Submer Islands, just like Sirella Sand. The Sphinx lives in Old Town. Sirella Sand loves Old Town and is left to be with Aryo Hota because she is outside of Dorne. They are both known to be either incredibly studious or, curious with an interest in history, right? The Dornish accent, the nut-colored skin, the smile as if he/she knew some secret jape. This is no new theory, but the Sphinx had their third chain. Yeah, had their his or her third chain forged while within a year, which is absolutely exceptional. And I actually have wondered about Sam being at the Citadel, and Marwyn kind of encourages him to get his chain forged as quickly as possible and return to the wall. Like, how long does it take to forge that chain? You know, the Sphinx seems to be doing it rather rapidly, so as the ghost is mentioning here. The Sphinx has taken no maester vows and can go as he or she pleases. I really believe the Sphinx has good intentions and will help Sam with the higher magic and mysteries that have been handed down by Marwyn. But if the Sphinx is the riddle, I believe that the Sphinx does know about all the moves happening in Dorne and will put Sam in position to act accordingly, by extension, Lord Snow. If Sam can uncover this, maybe Sand Snake's riddle, he could potentially save the realm from another long, bloody Dornish war. So that's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the idea that I think we're, in the show, we see Sam's there and he's trying to figure out things that will help the Night's Watch.
Right.
And this take here is that basically, I just don't know how much, it's real cryptic. What does Maester Aemon mean when he says this to Sam?
Exactly.
Like, what the heck is he talking about?
And here's my thing. How does he know?
How does he know? Yes, I know. It's kind of unreal. Marwyn actually says that that basically, I forget what the quote is, but he talks about the Citadel and how this world of magic and dragons and burning candles and things is not a world that the Citadel wants to see come to be. You know what I mean?
Right.
They don't want that happening. If that were the case, they wouldn't let Maester Aemon waste away up at the wall. They would have made him, Archmaester. They would have made him like a high maester, and they don't. They let him stay up there. It's because of his last name and who he is and things, and they don't want him back. But he kind of holds him in such high esteem, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
Marwyn's, working in some, he's working with Shadowbinders. He's been all over. He's been to Ib, all over these different places. And so it's just fascinating to hear him kind of talk about Aemon in that way. But I don't know that Sam's going to, get any Dornish plot or uncover something. He could. Because it definitely seems like Dorne is gearing up for something.
Right.
With Targaryen, House Targaryen.
And we get this kind of Dornish civil war in the show. I mean, they cut the Dorne stuff so short because it kind of hurt their ratings. And, where the Sand Snakes kind of take out Prince Dorne Martell. So, I don't know. We don't know what the show doesn't give us any real details about what could happen in Dorne because they just cut it out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. But I even in the books, we're starting to get this gearing up. Something, Durant is he's up to something, right?
Right.
He definitely wants to seek revenge for the death of Elia Martell and her children. He's sending his son to secure a marriage agreement with Daenerys and things like that. And so he's got his daughter locked up, you know, and she was trying to put Cersei's daughter, gosh, what's her name? I just lost Marcella on the throne. You know, there's a lot going on. So perhaps, you know, but I kind of feel like if Illyris is Cirella Sand, which people believe that's the case, pretty solid, you know, very likely, then she's kind of been doing her own thing in the Citadel. I don't really know what. It sounds like she's up to her own tricks. You know, Durant actually says, let her continue at her game. You know, let her continue playing her game at the Citadel. And it's almost like she's not a part of his plans, you know. You know, at least when he's talking to his security and trying to secure the rest of the Sand Snakes.
Right.
And when he takes them in. So I honestly don't know how much Illyris or Cirella knows about what's going on in Dorne.
Right.
The politics or what have you. So I think it's just more that it almost seems too easy that it could be, you know, maybe it is just a, you know, that we think it's a male and it's presented that this is Illyris and it's actually Cirella. Maybe that's all it is.
Right.
You know, and maybe that's the riddle. But people think that's too simple. People think there's more to it. So I don't know. Some interesting other things here that the ghost sent our way. Just food for thought here. Samwell 3, A Feast of Crows. Let's see.
The island sat at the mouth of the Bay of Seals, massive and mountainous. A stark and forbidding land peopled by savages. They lived in caves and grim mountain fastness. Sam had read and rode great shaggy unicorns to war. Skagos meant stone in the old tongue. Speaking of magical creatures, there are unicorns on Skagos.
I thought that was kind of neat. Just some interesting.
Yeah, Skagos is this weird thing because if you look at where it is, it's kind of just off of Westeros, just right where kind of the wall is.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like wildling, but not really. Yeah. But yeah.
It's a weird spot for sure. Yeah. Samwell 1, A Feast of Crows. Sam was reading about the others when he saw the mouse. So
the mouse is the riddle.
Yeah, the mouse is the riddle, yeah. So there indeed are records of the others. He informs Lord Snow of their weakness to Dragonglass, how they only come out at night and bring the cold. The records do not show who they are or where they come from.
Right.
Okay, all right.
Then you have Brienne 5 from A Feast of Crows. I want my wife and daughter back, said the Hound. Can your father give me that? If not, he said, he can get buggered. That boy will rot beside you. Wolves will gnaw at your bones. Did you know that the Hound had a family? Because I sure didn't.
Yeah, I have not gone and looked this up. So that was kind of a shocker, isn't it?
Right.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know the context of it. You know, I want my wife and daughter back. Isn't that, I don't know.
I'm gonna have to go read specifically this chapter and just try and remember.
Yeah. Because he might have been calling someone else his wife and daughter.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one either. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, thanks, Ghost. We appreciate it. And, you know, I'm going to kind of move on here.
All right, here we go. Alexander Zoidberg.
Yeah.
Just finished up the show this morning. This was, I believe, last Friday.
Okay.
He sent this. Just finished up the show this morning. Had a thought about something you discussed. You were talking about Bloodraven towards the end of the podcast, and I thought, man, I wish we could really eventually get some of the deeper backstory of his life between the time of Dunk and Egg series and when we see him in the cave. Sadly, I don't think this is happening in Fire and Blood, but perhaps Wins has a brand flashback or something. Probably wishful thinking. I know he gets sent to the Night's Watch for beheading Aenys. That's Black Aenys Blackfyre.
Mm-hmm, yep.
But there are a lot of gaps in that part of the history. Aside from the little snippets in A World of Ice and Fire about his actions and Hand of the King, etc., he's an enigmatic and mysterious character that we would all love to get more deep content about, especially with the why and how of him ending up in the cave. Maybe we'll at least get some of that in early sorcery spymaster stuff in the next Dunk and Eggs and Egg books.
Yeah. Well,
Fire and Blood, I believe, is going to end with Dance of Dragons. So, like, Aegon the Third is where it's going to end.
Okay, yep.
So I don't think we're going to get any of that. And I think the reason is because Ger doesn't want to do Fire and Blood 2.
Well, he's
going to eventually.
Yeah.
But I feel like he's he's he wants to save that until he has more Dunkin' Egg written.
Me too. I think he wants more of the Dunkin' Egg stuff done, and then he'll get into Volume 2. Although, really, depending on how he does it, it just, like, he might, like, there's a lot of story in between, you know, Makar and Aegon the Fifth. So, like, that's where he could tell more of those tales and just leave that
right.
open,
yeah.
and leave that out of Volume 2, if he wants to. But I don't think... We might get more of it in Volume 2 of Fire and Blood, you know, years from now when that comes out. What are the odds, Sir Matt, that we get it? That we get something in Winds of Winter?
Oh, we're definitely going to get something in Winds
something.
Of Winter.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so in terms of that, we know Fire and Blood, first of all, is coming out this year.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get the next thing we get, Game of Thrones-wise, is going to be Winds of Winter.
Right.
Then it's kind of interesting because I don't know about the prequel show. Right? Like, is the prequel show going to be canon? Kind of like how in Harry Potter, you have the first Fantastic Beasts book, and then it's, well, just, are these movies canon?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, they could be.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, if that's
it's probably
case,
an area that he'll never write about, so that's probably why he's, you know,
right.
let that kind of
so, yeah, so is it canon? Is it going to be canon with at least the show, like, is it gonna, you know what I mean? I don't,
right.
I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
Are we starting to dive into like comic book territory where there's just a bunch of different stories written and everything's not like specifically one set canon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know, but do think eventually we will get some Blood Raven stuff.
Now, what about Winds of Winter though? Do you like think about where we're at, like? How
for
would
sure.
that go down, though? How do we get backstory on Bloodraven? Is it
well, Bloodraven's still alive,
right? He's, so you think he's just going to tell Bran? That's what I'm asking.
I think maybe
we're kind of making a prediction. Like, you
well,
know?
I it's kind of like that moment where I'm going to reference Harry Potter again here, when Snape is teaching Harry with like the Oculus,
yeah,
where like the thing where they can like. Do the memories or whatever.
The thing.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah. That thing. Yeah. And then, like, Harry gets upset and he, like,
yeah.
steals Snape's memory.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
what if we get something like that where Bran's, like, being pushed too hard and
yeah.
or something, or Bran wants to do more and he's like, no, you can't handle it. In
yeah.
the show, we kind of get that, right? Like, the show, The Three-Eyed Raven,
yeah.
is kind of like, well, you can't do this.
Right.
Like, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just kind of... dies and then Bran just kind of takes over and says, well,
mm-hmm.
I guess I can.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be kind of cool if in the books maybe it was like Bloodraven is like, no, you can't do that. You're not strong enough, or he's trying to keep him away from certain types of things.
Right.
And Bran can do it anyway. And so Bran's like, well, I'm just gonna go learn your story so then I can
yeah,
yell
what,
at you. Or
that's
something.
What I was wondering is would he get curious about who he's learning from and possibly go, you know, seek out
right.
Information there, and he could happen upon a conversation, you know, that's back in the, you know,
exactly.
honestly, Sir Duncan the Tall could be, you know, there and a part of something.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
it could be
even if we just get,
how cool would that be?
Right. Even if we just get another paragraph or two where the one paragraph we have, right, where he's like, I was Brendan. I did this. Even if we get another paragraph or two, you know what I mean? That's that kind of a thing. That will shed so much light. I mean, it's
yeah.
huge.
Oh, it will. It'll yeah.
be huge revelations about stuff. So,
right. And I just kind of wonder, you know, if I kind of wonder if it will show us anything when he's exiled. You know, I think that might be something he might go look at, because I think we're going to get what his motives were, what he was doing in the Seven Kingdoms there as Hand of the King, you know, up until he's exiled. But really, once he's exiled, like, did he know that was going to happen? I mean, does he have, you know, green dreams and these different things in a sense to where, like did he not foresee that happening
right.
by killing Aenys that he would be exiled?
I don't
know. Like, was that a part of his plan? You know?
Well,
it seems
like green dreams, from what we know, are pretty loose interpretations.
Yeah, they are.
Like, we see that with Daeron Targaryen, where he just says, I dreamt of you, and I saw a dragon dying.
Yeah.
And then it turns out it's Baelor Breakspear. So
it seems
like they're not these, like, exact, detailed.
Right, it's vague. It's left up for interpretation.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like Melisandre's flames. You know, it's like she's misinterpreted so many different things that she's seen there.
Well, even Thoros of Myr is talking to Arya when they're in that cave with Beric Dondarrion.
Yeah.
About the flames, and they're talking about just what their plans with her are going to be and stuff like that. And he's like, well, he's like, the flames are. He's like, I do what the flames tell me, even though I may not be able to interpret them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and right, yeah. So I don't know. I hope we do get more on what happens after he's exiled, or just maybe what if we had a conversation, you know, like Bran listens in on him and his sister, you know.
Sure, sister.
Yeah, his half-sister having like a conversation, you know, and there's some big
even anything. I mean, even if we got him, what if we saw Bran see the battle between him and Bittersteel? One of the battles between him and Bittersteel.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even like that, I mean, that could open tons of.
Here's a question for you.
Well, just
real quick, like, you know, I think we've in the show we see how this goes down, right? I mean, Bran eventually has to leave there, I think.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I think he has to leave the cave and reunite. Everyone's, you know, as we the earlier Raven had said, people moving back home. Does Blood Raven or the Three-Eyed Crow, whatever you want to, you know, the entity in the cave die? You know, in the show, for sure.
Yeah.
That happens. But does that actually happen here? You know, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I kind of almost wonder if it's like something is revealed there in which the reason he leaves is because he's just slowly being
kind of absorbed like by the tree.
I get that. But like remember how we were talking, like if he learns something about Blood Raven, perhaps that is what drives him away.
Yeah.
Because I always have this theory that like, something else is going on. We were talking about Parasite before, and how...
Yeah, well, actually, so, real quick, my notes. Took notes again this week as I've been plowing through stuff.
Right.
And something I totally forgot about was this part where Arya is having... She's warging, right?
Yeah.
It's right after the Red Wedding, and as Nymeria, she pulls a woman out of the river. And she... and then, like, the Hound... talks to her, and they talk about maybe she's still alive, maybe she's being held hostage, and Arya says, no, I had a dream. Like, in a dream, I saw that my mother was dead. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, 90%, you know, like 99%, you could say that it's Nymeria, right. Arya, that pulls her out of the river, right?
Right, yeah.
The people come find her, and then back to Lady Stoneheart. So,
back to Lady Stoneheart.
Yeah, back to Lady Stoneheart. So you and I were talking about that, and we were talking about, so that's kind of interesting, because... I think you and I have kind of just said on record that we believe that it's Blood Raven that sent those wolves south of the wall. Like, how did they get south of the wall?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would have to be someone that knew something about the Night's Watch, maybe knew a weakness or something to get these dire wolves beyond. And so then we talked, you know, we've talked before about the Three-Eyed Crow and the old gods, but now you have this situation where the Three-Eyed Crow and the Great Other, right? Potentially, there's that combo.
Right.
But then now you have this weird situation where you have a dire wolf that is seeming like it's helping the Lord of Light, because then Catelyn is raised by, you know, R'hllor. And so it's just interesting that you have that kind of a connection going on there. I mean, that's obviously a lot of strings you got to pull together, but it's still really interesting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, because it's sort of like you associate the Starks with like the old gods, right, and the First Men and these different things, and then you've got their dire wolves, which they've been south of the wall, but they just haven't been seen south of the wall in like years,
right?
You know, so it's like, how did they get here? Is the question? Are they sent by the old gods, or are they, as you said, you know, right. Blood Raven? Does Blood Raven send them? But then my question is, who is Blood Raven working for?
Right.
You know,
and you know, something else I've been thinking about. It seems like, because we think of the Great Other as part of like the old gods, it seems so weird that we keep making it seem like, and I mean, just in not just us, I mean, like in general, it makes it seem like the Great Other is the ultimate villain, right? It's going to be R'hllor versus the Great Other. But the Starks are, I would argue, the main characters. I mean, that is who your first two chapters are.
Yeah.
I mean, other characters come, and now you could argue Jon Snow is kind of the main character, certainly in the show. I mean, he's the one who lasts the longest, whatever. He's kind of like the main guy. But if the Starks are the main characters and the Starks worship the old gods, isn't it like weird that, you know what I mean? Like, these are the main characters that we root for, but and they have always worshipped the old gods, so you would think that the old gods should be better than the new, but that may not be the case. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, and again, I've always tried to kind of almost in my mind separate old gods.
Well, but the Great Other could be an old god and still not be good.
Yeah, I know. Like, and that's so it's so ambiguous though. Like,
I know
because like the you know R'hllor and the R'hllor faith and all of that. Like their belief is that there is. The Great Other, you know, and so like,
right.
When you talk about the old gods, like the old gods and the new gods and the seven and different things, do they have a great enemy?
Right.
Not really. Do they? I mean, like the seven just have their own faith, you know, it's not like there's like the seven believe in like a Satan or like a devil or something
like that. They have the stranger. Who's
right.
Dead.
It's really R'hllor who has the Great Other is like the opposite of R'hllor.
Yeah.
And so when I hear the children worshiping the old gods, I don't associate that with
the Great Other.
The Great Other, exactly. Yeah. So that's where
it's
I'm
weird.
Always
it's
like,
all, it's still far too ambiguous.
And then the fact that like, yeah, they're beyond the wall, and then they're hanging out with the children who obviously worshipped the old gods.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like,
I know.
What is going on?
I know,
so that's just mind blowing. And then like, so we were getting into the irony in that Nymeria saves Lady Stoneheart. You know, Catelyn.
Who then immediately becomes Lady Stoneheart right after
who
that.
Who then becomes a devout follower of R'hllor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And she never really worshipped the old gods. She thought they were creepy and weird.
Right.
And she worshipped the seven.
The seven, yeah.
I know. It's crazy. Like,
so it's all getting mixed. And it was just kind of one of those, when you start to talk about the gods and the way they influence things, they influence, you know?
Yeah, so anyway, right there with you in that I do hope we get more of Bloodraven in some way, because that Bloodraven is that one character that ties, you know, obviously a lot. He's in a lot of things, right? You have the Duncan Egg series, you have the not just this current series, but you have like Targaryen theories, you have God theories, you have the Three-Eyed Crow, the stuff at the Night's Watch. Like, he's all over the place. A Thousand Eyes in One.
Yep.
He could still know. He could still know maybe like offshoot Blackfyres. I mean, so many things. So one thing I wanted to say real quick is, and this isn't something we've seen, but you in Star Wars,
yep,
Episode 7.
Yep.
So for those of you guys who haven't seen it, it is, you know, it's in the new movies. I know some people don't like those.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering about something. So Gurr did just confirm that Bloodraven did take Dark Sister. Now, Dark Sister could be Longclaw, could just be hanging out. Some people think it's in the cave. But what if Bran grabs, like, let's say he grabs Dark Sister or something?
Yeah.
So in the Weirwood network, I mean, imagine you could just kind of go in and see whatever you want, right? So I'm wondering maybe if he's, like, holding something, could he get, like, the history of that particular item?
Oh, wow.
So I'm kind of thinking, like, in Star Wars Episode 7, where Rey picks up the lightsaber, which kind of has that, you know, like force vision,
right?
Like a similar type thing.
That's a good thought.
And maybe, so then maybe we get some Dark Sister history,
right?
And then that would potentially show us where Blackfyre is. And, you know, I don't know,
right? That would be kind of neat, actually. If you can touch an object like that, and
because I mean, you can obviously just go in and kind of find whatever you want, you just have to look for it, but that makes it easier,
yeah.
And maybe he does that with the dagger, right? Like, and then we get some history about that Valyrian steel dagger, or something, or maybe he, you know what I mean, maybe he like sees the dagger if he has a similar vision like we have in the show, where he goes back and he sees the kind of like Night King being created,
yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah,
these are all just total rabbit hole thoughts that I just have throughout the week.
It's great. You know what I just started thinking? I was thinking about this Weirwood network and the trees, and how, you know, you can see things through them.
Yeah.
Right. The other thing that you can see things through is
real quick
the flames. Yeah.
Not this room, because it is pitch black in here, guys. We just wanted to let you know real quick. I just noticed this is we forgot to turn the light on in this room.
What did you see? Did you see something?
No, it's just
is there a ghost in here?
We might be. We forgot to turn the light on in this room, and yeah. We had the window, and this room's getting dark and full of terrors. But we ain't turning the light on because we won't take it. We don't edit it.
Oh no, we don't.
Except for that one time.
Which anyways, you guys,
we're talking about the old guys, man. I'm just scared. I don't like the dark.
I know, man.
It's full of terrors.
I can barely see you over there. You're like, you know.
Luckily, I got the bright light of my Mac here. Yeah.
It's funny. So we talk so long. Sometimes that sun sets and it just got dark and full of terrors. And I keep hearing something to my left.
Yeah.
And I know we're here by ourselves. So I'm like, what? Who is sneaking up my stairs?
Yeah.
But anyways,
there is that old haunted mansion that burnt down a couple years ago.
Yeah,
insane asylum, legit.
I live right next to one, and I've heard things my whole life here.
Yeah, it's not the ghost of Aaron Hall; it's the ghost of the old Knox County poorhouse.
That's right.
Yeah,
it's really
look it up.
Don't look up the Knox County poorhouse in Ohio, and they'll have some fun.
Now they
know
exactly where you live.
Yeah, they're like, oh, it's right down the road there. Yeah, so. Seeing things. So think about that for a second. You've got this white weirwood, right? And I can touch it and I can see into it. And then I've got this red, white ice, right?
Right.
Red fire flame, right? And you can see into those two things. I'm starting more and more to think that even though I just said I want to separate the old gods from the great other, I'm starting to think, what are the two things that you can really look into and see either? Like, and here's the difference, right? With the flames, do you not see the future?
Right.
But then with the weirwoods, you see the past.
Yeah.
You know, so like it almost does feel like that weirwood network is somehow a very cold and like a dead tree and associated with the great other.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly. Mm-hmm. So and they worshipped and the children worshipped those.
Right.
You know, trees. So I'm just, I don't know. You know, I'm more and more baffled as I think about it. So, you know, Lord Adam Parker sent us an email at one point, a raven that was supposed to end this conversation, but I don't think it'll ever be ended. There's
all right, well,
good thoughts out there from everyone.
Let's move on to our last raven here from Lady Jade. Good morrow, sirs. I can't stop thinking about Ashara Dane and that she is potentially Jon Snow's mother. I do not, however, believe that Eddard Stark is his father. I think Eddard is too much of a goody-goody to be sleeping with beautiful women and keep his duty and honor intact. I don't think it would have been Brandon Stark either as he was betrothed to Kat. I do think it's possible. Could be Benjen Stark. Benjen and Ashar were both born in mid-260 AC. It has always bothered me why Benjen took the black. Could it be because he was grieving for the death of Ashara and their baby?
Wow, man. First of all, you know, it really good to hear, you know, from Lady Jade.
Yeah.
So haven't heard her from her in
a
bit.
Yeah.
So good to hear from you, Lady Jade. But this is I haven't really thought about. You kind of forget about Benjen, you know.
It's true.
And I hadn't really thought about him, but I'm about to look him up here real quick. Where was he in relationship to her? You know, like their interactions.
I thought he stayed at Winterfell when the tourney was going on.
Too,
but you know what? Their dad was still alive then.
Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
He probably stayed there. And all the kids went to the tourney.
Yeah, that could.
Did he go?
I'm looking here real quick.
Did Benjen Stark go? Well, regardless. So
neat thought though. I mean
it is possible, and we don't know why Benjen took the black. I mean, the most obvious answer is Rickard Stark had three kids.
He did it. He did attend the tourney. Yep. Yeah,
he did. Benjen did
at Harrenhal.
Okay.
Yep.
So I mean, he has four kids, right? You know, one girl, three sons. So you have Brandon, who's betrothed to Catelyn Tully, which is River Run. Like that's a huge marriage. That's a big marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, you're talking River Run, which is the seat of, you know, the Riverlands and the Starks of Winterfell. So that's a huge marriage. At the time. And so then you've got Ned, who he's probably like, you know, you're second in line, so you could marry, I guess, maybe whoever you want. Obviously, most of us think Ashara Dane is who he was kind of going to go with. And so then Benjen, you know, the Starks are known to, well, let's man the wall, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that is the most logical, I guess, kind of thing you would. you know, you would look at. But then when Brandon dies, it is interesting that Benjen still goes to the wall.
Yeah, and he goes when he actually goes after the war and everything, when
because he is the Stark who then stays in Winterfell.
At Winterfell, and then when his brother comes home, then he takes off. Now I was reading here on the wiki. I just went to do a quick little search because I couldn't remember. But you know, he's teasing Lyanna at the tourney, mm-hmm. and because she's crying over Rhaegar's song, and she pours wine over his head and all that kind of stuff, right? And then at one point, the Night's Watch gets up and they give a plea, a speech, like they spoke mm-hmm. at the tourney, and they were trying to get recruits. And all it says here on the wiki, and I wish I had more to this, it says Benjen took that plea to heart.
Right.
So at that point, he's, and that's basically, let's see, it's in A World of Ice and Fire where that's said. So we'll get there eventually. But, you know, he took that plea to heart and probably thought about it.
Maybe that's why Ashara Dane jumps into the ocean. If she's not,
She's not associated to, like, you know.
Right. So toss out the whole she's still alive and is, what's her name, that Septa that Tyrion wants to hook up with.
Right.
Her and Ned, like that, toss out all that. Yeah. So maybe she jumps in, not because maybe she's so
distraught that he left and went to
distraught that Arthur Dayne is dead, but that Benjen, her one true love is
also gone. It's like you lose everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be interesting. I'm more, you know, I think you and I, we've said before, we think she fakes her death. But you know, Benjen just seems struck by that desire to that calling.
Right.
It seems like from with their plea there. So be interested to see who.
Right.
Man, what year does Bloodraven disappear again? Was it 256 or something? I wonder what year. Yeah. What year is? Oh, Harrenhal's 281. Okay.
Trying to
remember when he disappeared. Like, who would be Lord Commander? It'd probably be Mormont at that time. Yeah. Maybe, possibly.
Maybe. Maybe somebody else.
Might be there. Somebody just before him, because remember his son is still. That's when.
Which, dude, hold on a second. That's really interesting.
Have to get that timeline.
Wow, let me think about this. All right, guys, because now I just got a crazy theory.
What are you thinking
here? I mean, so let's go down this rabbit hole.
Okay.
That Benjen is Jon's dad. So Ned is at the Tower of Joy. Lyanna's dead.
Yep.
The whole thing, right?
Okay.
So she's saying that Benjen is. So I don't know what else happens at the Tower of Joy. Maybe he's not a baby. Maybe Lyanna is just dead in a pool of blood.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's young Aegon and they send him over. I don't know. But anyway, so Ned leaves, goes to Starfall, and he takes Dawn with him. Takes the sword.
Yeah.
And then we know he comes back to Winterfell with a baby. So let's say it's Ashara Dane's and Benjen's. And then maybe he, that's why Benjen goes, is like, well, I'm definitely going to the wall now.
Yeah.
Or maybe he knew beforehand, because that would be why she did it. Or maybe it makes more sense that she tosses herself into the ocean because her brother's dead. And so then Benjen still ends up going to the wall, maybe more so because of that. I was just thinking about, is Dawn Lightbringer?
Okay.
Or is Dawn Longclaw?
Oh, Longclaw.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Gotcha.
And then that would make Jon Sword of the Morning. And he is also in the Night's Watch. And what do they say? It's like, I am the sword.
Guards the realms of men?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I'm the shield that guards the realm of men, but I am the sword in the darkness.
Sword in the darkness. There you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be, except for when he's never mind. When he was fighting Rattle, I was trying to think when he was fighting Rattleshirt, which they talk about. Remember the whole
trying to remember
what type of sword it was. But anyways, I get you. Yeah, that's interesting. I was just trying to look up the list of Lord Commanders here. It looks like I can't.
Of the Night's Watch, yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to find it. They don't have a whole lot of information on before Jor Mormont joined. It looks like it was like 288. You know, by the time he, what's it say here? Just for reference, Oh no, I did have the list up here. Oh, John becomes the so yeah, 288 is when he is elected Lord Commander. So I just kind of wondered who it was before you know,
right.
when Benjen went there. So oh wow, there is actually someone. His first name is never given. Lord Commander, whew, I can't even pronounce that. Corgalith, I think. Is it the one after Brendan?
Rivers.
Rivers, it seems like.
After Bloodraven? Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, interesting. Okay, cool.
All right. Well, all right, guys. That's I think that's kind of the show.
Yeah. Some good Raven. Some good food for thought going forward. So.
Yeah. So, all right. Trivia. Interesting that the ghost kind of set us up for this, and I didn't know it.
I just
kind of picked it, and because the way we do this doc is I pull the ones from, like, Facebook and Instagram, and Sir Ezra pulls the ones from Google, so he usually sees the ghost because he sends them via Gmail. So, anyway, who is the captain of the Cinnamon Wind? It totally shocked me when he said it. I was going to stop you and say, trivia, do it right in the middle of someone's question.
Right. Yeah.
So who is the captain of the Cinnamon Wind is the trivia for this week.
Yeah.
And, all right, in closing, I want to thank you guys for listening, as always. And in the words of House Wode, touch me not.